podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm talking with James, also known as Mystic.
I let the whole region down. That's on me, guys. I'm so sorry.
You said you went on holiday, and all you could think about was Valorant. All you could think about was being a pro.
The idea of me wanting to chase my dreams, and like that's just constantly something I have to deal with.
Make sure to follow for future episodes. It really does mean a lot right now. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Mystic beyond the game. Right, well, James, welcome to Beyond the Game.
On the game.
Yeah. You are going to be probably one of the youngest guests we have on for a while anyway, as you're a pro player, so you are part of the younger demographic of professionals within the gaming space. I want to start, though, right back at the beginning. What was your gaming journey like to lead you to where you are now as a pro player?
I mean, I got into gaming at a very young age. I think I was like 4 years old, and when my dad dropped a PS2 on my lap, and I was just like, here you go. It's the gaming world, go explore. I think like one of my first ever games was actually surprisingly GTA San Andreas.
Blimey, when you were that young.
I was like a little 4 or 5 year old just going around, just, you know, doing things I shouldn't have been doing at that age. But
so you started with gun games, I guess. It's not really a gun game, is it? Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah. No, I played a wide range of games. I think my first ever FPS shooter was a James Bond GoldenEye game or something like that. Oh. It's just from back in the day. It's like, it was so good. All I can remember there is like some snow map and like some silenced pistols. But like, I pretty much got into shooter games like since the beginning.
Yeah, I think Ian Chambers, who was our first guest, he brought up GoldenEye as one of his favorite games. It was one of the first shooter games that really made people realize the potential of shooter games and the first person and the idea of just running around and clicking heads as you do now.
Yeah, clicking heads. I mean, yeah, there's something to it where like obviously a part of it is real life, and like obviously we don't want to experience that ourselves, so we just go around and shoot each other in digital worlds. So,
it's that yeah. kind of world that we can't experience but we know about, you know. We yeah. all grow up hearing about wars in history. We hear about guns in particular around the culture of war and crime and all that, all the kind of things that we don't ever want to experience. But as you said, when we play shooter games, we kind of immerse ourselves in a world yeah. where that has no consequences. So you yeah. can enjoy the fun side without the negative side. Do you think that side of you has always been there with gaming, or do you think it's something you've developed over time? You always enjoyed shooters?
I think it did develop over time a little bit when it came to growing up older and playing like shooter games with my friends. That's when I kind of really got into it. Mm-hmm. I think early on in my gaming life, I was just thrown in there and I just played whatever appealed to me at the time, you know, like Crash Bandicoot was one of the top games back then. But yeah, like as I grew older, I got like the Xbox 360, PlayStation, you know, like I followed along with my friends and we just played whatever game was like popping at the time. So I grew up a lot on FIFA. I grew up a lot with Call of Duty. And mm-hmm. yeah, that's really where it started from.
A typical young boy's video game childhood yeah. there. But I guess the big thing there I heard was with friends. So for yeah. you, gaming was quite a social thing.
Yeah, like gaming was a way for me to be able to just have fun, seek a bit of happiness. And I think like the way I view gaming is just bringing communities together, and like it appeals to so many different type of people, because you can enjoy gaming by playing multiplayer games or whether that's by yourself, you know, it appeals to a lot of different people. So the whole like, you know, gaming to me is more about just having fun, and whether that's by yourself or with others, that's how it goes.
Yeah, skipping ahead to the final question of the podcast. Oh, there. No, you're right. It's the final question of the podcast. I'll do it now just because you're on the topic, but we ask every guest, what does gaming mean to you? And you kind of summarized it beautifully there of all of those different sentiments around an escape, happiness, bringing people together, socializing. Is there anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I think, like I just said, like having bringing all these communities together. I've met so many new friends over the past few years. Like, I've formed new relationships with people through just gaming, right? And it's just like a way of bringing people together in a more of a fun dynamic way. Like, you have like it forms similar interests between people, and like at the end of the day, it's just a game, and no matter how serious you take it, it's just like a bit of fun in the end.
So now you are known as Mystic.
Mm-hmm.
As your username suggests, you go by James amongst your friends and everything. And obviously growing up, you were James. What was young James like as a person outside of gaming?
Person outside of gaming? So I was a very competitive person. I think that shifted into my gaming life as well. But like growing up, I used to compete in football. I used to just do things that, you know, typically made me happy, or do things that was considered like socialable. But
you're trying to compete but also enjoy. So you're quite a hobbyist. You had a lot of things that you'd like doing that integrated your social life into the hobby, and now you're in a weird position where one of your hobbies and passions has become your job.
Yep.
We'll get more into the details of being a pro player, but how did that shift feel for you where you went from gaming as a hobby to now gaming as your life and your job and your career?
The shift was, it was a big shift, but I feel like for me personally, it happened over a long period of time. I've always enjoyed competing in whatever game title I was playing. Like, I've been playing H1Z1, like CSGO, like competing against other players and like dedicating a decent amount of time to these game titles to, you know, either solidify myself as a good player or whether that's just the enjoyment of being in a competitive environment. It's always been there in my life where I would take time out of my week or so to commit to these sort of gaming, I don't know, stories or, you know, journeys. When I made that, when I finally made that shift to going pro, it like kind of like solidified it for me. And it was like that, like I kind of like made it now. Like, mm-hmm. I've kind of like, this is my life, and it's kind of what I hoped for it to be, kind of thing. Yeah.
So did you have contingency plans? Were you thinking of other things before you went pro, or was it all in on pro?
So yeah, I had contingency plans. It was more like go to college, you know, finish school, complete the general educational direction. I don't know. Like,
what were you studying then? What were you studying?
So I finished school and I went into college and I just did computer studies. I just did computing because I wasn't really confident on what I wanted to do. Like, I was kind of in that lost space of trying to figure out what I actually want to do and whether it would make me happy. So it was something that just I hopped on because a couple of my friends were doing it as well. And it was just like, I wanted to be doing something where I was happy to a certain extent and not doing something that would make me upset. So yeah, I was just lost generally. And then like gaming was a passion of mine like for a very long time. And luckily enough, it kind of fell into place, especially like with Valorant and COVID happening at the same time. It led to a window of opportunity there.
Yeah, I feel like Valorant was timed perfectly for a lot of people. There's a lot of young players who weren't able to break into something like CSGO or were just getting bored of the previous game they were trying to get good at. And then Valorant came about and it sort of relit that competitive flame in a lot of people, like Overwatch players, CSGO players, Fortnite players, brought them all together into this one competitive space and created a huge ecosystem for people like yourself. You found yourself on Fnatic. How did that come to be?
Yeah, it was actually crazy because, like I said, Valorant came out during COVID the whole of UK was stuck indoors for a very long time. And I was just like, hey, let's give this a go. Like, I like competing in general. Like, at the start, it kind of began as like a hobby. I was just like, this is what I've been doing for a long time anyway. I'll see where it goes. Basically, just wanted to see how well I could do in the scene, right? So for me, making it to Fnatic, it began as like, it started from like an unsigned journey, like where me and a couple of people got together. I met Boaster very early on in Valorant, and I'd seen that he had that competitive drive as well. And I just wanted to surround myself with people that had the same mindset of me, of just grind, just, you know, put the time and effort into the game to see how far you can go. And hey, it led me to Fnatic.
Yeah. So you mentioned Boaster, massive key figurehead in Valorant's development. I've followed his journey a little bit from CSGO days and through the vlogging at League of Legends, everything like that. And to have someone like that on your team with experience, what did you learn surrounding yourself with people like Boaster and your other teammates?
Yeah, like it taught me quite a lot, especially how disciplined you need to be within this competitive environment. It's not all just give and take. It's, you got to work for it, you know. It's and it showed to me that if you put in that hard work, you're able to accomplish your dreams and your goals. So yeah, being surrounded by teammates like Boaster specifically has you know, encouraged me to work just as hard and you know, progress as a player throughout my career.
Yeah, well, your career so far with Fnatic has been, I would say, pretty successful. You know, every player is always going to think of the perfect scenario and yeah, pretend that isn't quite what you're hoping for. But as far as your career goes, you know, at this stage, you've achieved a huge amount for a young player in a new competitive space. What was that year of competing? It's a year and a half now, right?
It's like 2 years.
It's
like 2.5 years since Valorant came out.
Yeah, so 2 years with Fnatic. Yeah. How have those years been, and what kind of achievements have you guys had?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long ride, a lot of roster changes throughout. And it's just been exciting. It's been very, like, really exciting to be a part of the Valorant ecosystem. I remember receiving that contract on that day and being like, wow, this is the real deal. Like, this is actually something I've achieved. It's something I'm really happy about. And like, since then to now, I've always strived to be the best player I can be throughout my journey. And yeah, it's been great. I've met a lot of people along the way, a lot of nice colleagues. Like, the Fnatic staff are amazing. Teammates, of course, like, they've come and gone, but like, I've always like built a relationship with all of them. I speak to all of them to this day. So
that's one of the things I've noticed with Fnatic is, I would say Fnatic's probably my favorite team. Part of the reason is people like yourself on the team. But one of the things I've always admired is the way you guys release players, yet you guys still are friends. You're still connected. What is it about that team environment at Fnatic that created such a healthy dropping system, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, like, it comes down to, I don't know, we all do, like, we all got on very well. Like if you're a new player coming into this like Fnatic team, and you might be a bit like worried about what to expect, and you're not kind of sure like how to handle things, like, at Fnatic, they do it in a manner that's very like welcoming. I think we've got people like myself and Boaster, they're just being very welcoming and very friendly with these new players, and making sure that everyone feels, you know, comfortable within the team. So I think we develop them friendships over time quite quickly as well. And when changes do happen, like, I'd say, obviously, their contact is still there, and like, there's no like personal beef, like, or personal issues with the players, because we're, at the end of the day, we're all friends, and we've built that relationship over the few years.
Yeah, was there any of them that you felt, when they happened, you thought they were going to go sour, you thought someone was going to react badly, and then surprisingly, it didn't go that way? Because I it's very hard to imagine from the outside how frequent the parting of teams turns sour because a player either believes they shouldn't have been dropped, you know, the circumstances of it mean they can't find a new team, whatever it is. How did you guys deal with those potential sour dropping of players, and did you ever find that it wasn't as bad as you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, so there's an instance where I've been teammates with a player called Mo Forty, and I've been his teammate for since the beginning. When we were unsigned as called named Summon FC, we were called Summon FC, and we got picked up to Fnatic. I've been his teammate for a very long time, and I think there's just the aspect of friendship is there. Like, I think like it was kind of like an unbreakable bond. Like, there's no like sourness to come between us because we've had such a long friendship. And yeah, like, it came as a surprise when he got dropped, and it was very like hard to deal with as a player as well, because I was more like confused about the decision, or like, you know, upset, because at the end of the day, he's been a long-term like friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think it just comes down to acting professional in these sort of situations. Like, esports is a very rough, you know, system where people are dropped very so often. And I think Fnatic's one of the teams where they decide to, you know, work to building a team long term, and you know, keeping these players and relationships together to, you know, see how far you can go. And mm-hmm. I think because how well the relationships are built over the years, players are understanding and, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Well, before we get on to more talking about your career, in particular tournament results and how they might have affected you, let's jump back to the question that we ask all of our guests. So we ask them their top five most influential games or favorite games. Take it however you want, but your top five video games of all time.
Okay, top five video games of all time. I'd have to put CSGO as my number one.
Okay, interesting.
I'm starting from one to five.
You're giving them an order. You don't have to give them an order, but you're going to go with the order.
I'll try with the order. I think CSGO is up there for me because it was my first PC shooter game that I clinged onto, and it taught me a lot. Like, even to this day, like in terms of competing, where my mechanical skills come from, I've like developed so many friendships on that game, and so many good like things have come for it for me personally. So I have to value that one quite highly of myself. But yeah, there's another game. I shouldn't have said CSGO one as my number one, because I put this on par actually. A game called H1Z1. It's a battle royale, one of the earliest battle royales out there. And that one's a special game for me because I have like developed so many friendships. I've had so many fun times, and that's where I mainly put a lot of my hours into competing in a competitive environment before I made the Valorant break.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to dedicate a lot to that game because it's done so much for me as well.
Yeah, and these are quite influential games at this point. I wonder if there's going to be any sort of games in there that aren't as influential in your career.
Yeah, no, there's Valorant, of course. I think that's just got to be in my top five.
I was going to be a bit worried for a second if it wasn't. There'll be some concerns, anyone who's looking to play with you in the future. Yeah, no, you don't Valorant, love the game.
Of course it's in my top five. It's changed my life at the end of the day, and it's so enjoyable to play with the... I'm not going to explain it. Everyone knows.
Valorant's a great game, but it's also... it's quite easy for a lot of people to look at a pro player and go, oh, you know, of course your favorite game's going to be in there.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time... It you feel about it a different way to other games. Like, for example, right now I'm playing Pokemon, and it's like one of my favorite things to do is play Pokemon. But Rocket League is still the most influential game in my life. It's probably one of my favorite games as well, but it's not necessarily my favorite game because it's a job as well.
Yeah.
Right? So sometimes you don't think of the games you work in the same way you do about a game that you're just experiencing, right?
Yeah. Like, I think... obviously that has that job aspect to it, and you try not to let that get in the way of how you view the game. But like, sometimes you wish you could just like step away from that job aspect of the game and just, you know, go queue ranked or go queue casual with your friends like how you used to back in the day, and just have fun, like just experience fun to the maximum. But sometimes, yeah, for it to be my job, it gets in the way. A little bit, But like, it's what I signed up to, and I enjoy it. Like, I love it. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Valorant. So
yeah, you have to love it to a certain extent for it to be your career as well. If you don't, then people won't last that long. And as a pro player, if they don't love the game, but anyway, you got your three games so far. So H1Z1, Counter Strike, and Valorant.
Yeah. So, right, this is a tough one, but I'm gonna have to put Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Okay, there we go.
I heard a little giggle from over there. Nah, it's a banger game, bro. I remember just watching some playthroughs on YouTube like a couple years back or something, and it just reminded me so much of my childhood. And that's I think like my love for gaming like came from. Like
doing tricks,
like jumping. But I'm like, there's like this thing where you can TP from a cave to like the top of like the Hollywood sign, and I'll go in that cave and just like launch myself off like 7 times because I just thought it was amusing. Like I was like, what am I doing?
Can I ask how old you were when you played it?
Mate, 5, 6, I don't know.
It's the games you were playing from the age of 5. I mean, you were a hardcore gamer from the start.
Oh yeah, no. My dad just threw me into the deep end. I remember just going to my uncle's like Xbox 360 and bashing out COD when I was like 6 or 7. Because like, I'm surprised I haven't turned into some like super villain or something. But yeah,
you're that kid that everyone talks about. Well, you were that kid that everyone talks about when they're playing COD and they're like, oh, there's some kid on the other team.
This guy's beating me. He sounds like a 5-year-old, but he is actually 5.
Yeah, and then the fifth game. So you got Tony Hawk's in there at number 4. I can't tell right now whether you're thinking or whether you've got something on your mind, you just don't want to share it. Because for context, I gave you notice that you're going to have 5 games.
I know.
And you still weren't sure when we sat down, so.
Because there's a way where how I value games, and it's just like, how much enjoyment have I gotten from it? Or how many memories have I formed from it? Like, and I think probably one of the early Call of Duties, like Call of Duty Black Ops 2, was a very big one for me, because it was a game that everyone at my school talked about. Even like, we'll go to school, play it, we'll go to school, finish school, go home, run home, play it, you know, set up some custom lobbies and like trash talk each other, and then like head back to school the next day and just, you know, continue talking about it. And I think like, it goes for a lot of games around that like 10, 11, 12, where you have a group of friends and you can like, you know, constantly talk about it when you're at school and when you're away from school. It's like one of those games that would stick with you forever.
Interesting. I mean, my childhood was very different to yours in terms of the games we played.
I'm not that old. Like, I don't have these Nintendo 64 games.
it wasn't even just about the age. It was more just the types of games. Like, your games are ones that I've grown up with, but just at a later stage. Mm. But when I was talking about those games was when I was 16 to 18. Whereas the kind of games you were talking about when you were 10, it's just all shifted a bit earlier.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing, because it's led you to where you are today. So the outcomes of your childhood have led you to this moment. And we got our top 5 games there.
I wish I could come back another day, have different feelings about these games and come with a completely different list.
That's the hard thing about it. Especially when you work in gaming, because there's the influence of the games on your career. Mm. And then there's just those games which you enjoyed playing the whole way through. So here's a tough one. But off the back of those 5, so you had CSGO, H1Z1, Valorant, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and then Call of Duty Black Ops 2.
Yeah.
Was at the end.
Yeah. This is a terrible list, guys. Don't judge me on this list. It's a terrible list.
Yeah, it is what it is. There'll be someone out there who's got very similar lists. Actually, there's probably no one out there with the same list as you.
No one's got Tony Hawk's mixed in
with the rest of those.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess the second question that I ask everyone is, what is the greatest gaming achievement for you? And I was saying before we went live on this podcast that you're probably going to have a very unique top achievement compared to some of the other guests, because we've got a lot of guests on who are just gamers but have another profession, or they host or whatever it is. And so for them, competing hasn't been a big factor in their life. Feel free to go ahead with what your achievement is, but I should imagine it's something you've done whilst competing.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, I have two answers that I could go off of, and that would, one would be getting my first pro contract, especially for a big name such as Fnatic. And then my second would be I came second. I made it to the final, the first ever Valorant International event. We played that final in front of like 1.3 million viewers, I think it had at the time. So one of the most viewed games in Valorant history. So that was probably one of my biggest achievements.
Yeah, I mean, you've had some pretty crazy moments in your career. Yeah. And that kind of brings me on to what I want to talk about is the mental health challenges of being a pro player and, you know, the highs and the lows. And in that very tournament, you had one of your lowest moments as you team flashed, which is now jokingly known as a Mystic Flash.
You flash. Yeah. I let the whole region down. That's on me, guys. I'm so sorry.
Do you want to set the scene of where we were in the match when it happened?
Okay, so we're at grand finals of Valorant's biggest ever event yet. We got this NA-EU rivalry. Fnatic versus Sentinels, some of the biggest names in the scene. And we made it all the way to the finals. It's a best of five. We have a very close first two maps. Could have gone either way. I think it went overtime in one of the maps. And then we got onto the third map where it was a 12-11 scoreline. 12-11 to Sentinels. We had the sight. We were looking very good to win this round. And something in my head just made me pull out a flash, you know, throw it back tight, and I blinded my team. I team flashed my teammate, Doma, just before he was about to get a lot of kills and probably win us that round. So yeah, I did that in front of 1.3 million viewers. Yeah.
And now you can laugh about it because, you know, that's the way you deal with it. You know, you sometimes joke about it yourself. At the time, how did you feel after that match?
Oh, like, it didn't hit me straight away. It was just like another mistake in the moment to me that I made. And like, you know, I'm very critical of myself and I just hate doing it to begin with. And I think there's like footage of me like tearing up a little bit after that game, just like head on hands. I was devastated. I was so upset. And then it sunk in a little bit more. I remember the next day after that game, I just wanted to stay in my room the whole day. Like, I didn't really want to show my face to anyone. Whilst they're out having fun in Iceland, I was just like, I was very disappointed in myself, and it had a pretty big effect on my mental at the time, because I was like, you know, battling in my own thoughts, like, oh, you're so bad. But then like another side of me is just like, you made it to a grand final kind of thing. And it's like, it's something hard to deal with in the moment, but like, as you said, like over time, I've managed to, you know, look back on it and like look at it in a joking way and, you know, just live with it. It's fun and games at the end of the day.
And at the time, because those kind of moments are the kind of moments that people love to meme about on social media, were you getting a lot of negative attention for that?
To this day, I get people in my Spike Rush games or like my ranked games, you're like, yo, Mr., are you the one that threw that flash 2 years ago? I'm like, man, just kind of like, man, how do you still remember this? Uh-huh. I thought this would have just blown over a little bit. But yeah, like, I remember I didn't want to touch. Like, I remember like looking at the VLR thread, which is like the where all the scores and comments are shown. And like, the first couple of messages were like, Mystic through, blah, 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 like, what is he doing? And I was just like, that I am not touching social media, like, out of my own health. Like, for my own mental health, I'm not gonna touch it for the come at least a week, I'd say. And I think, like, luckily enough, I was surrounded by good teammates and our talent, Kojo at the time, our manager, was just like, just stay away from it, because like, you see it a lot in esports, and I think it can have an effect on people. Like, some people like treat it differently. Some people use it as fuel. Mm-hmm. Like coming into the later tournament, like into their next game or whatever, but also some people can crumble under that And yeah, I didn't want to find out there and then. That's how I felt.
Yeah, and I guess it's also the timing of it is just after you've made the grand final, so you're on that highest of highs you've ever had, the feeling of oh my god, I'm in the grand final of the first ever Valorant tournament. And you know, at that point you still believe you can win, you still go into that with the same mindset you would at any other game. So you go from that peak of happiness and excitement and nerves and all those kind of like very positive competitive emotions to, oh my god, I've just, like you said, negative thoughts, I've just thrown the final, I've just done this, I've just done that,
let down your teammates.
And you know, thankfully for you, your teammates believed in you and they kept you, and you competed with them for a long time since. You've had some ups and downs in your journey, and we could talk about every single one of them, but I want to hear for you, which particular moment do you remember feeling at your lowest in your competitive time at Fnatic?
I think personally my lowest, I think not, it wasn't actually too long ago, I'd say it was like the second Masters this year. I've just had a role swap, gone from controller to now flashes again, and I wasn't putting up the numbers that I wanted to do, like wanted to be putting up. I was getting in my own head about whether my settings were wrong or like my warm up routine was wrong, and it had like a pretty like deep effect on my mental. Constantly on my mind, I couldn't shake it off. And it was hard to deal with. Like, I think my teammates could probably have seen me struggling as well, on and off the server. And yeah, like it's not a nice place to be in, because it's very hard to deal with. I've been in esports for a while now, or in Valorant for a while now, and like I've gone from, you know, say making this grand finals to not even qualifying for the next international event. Like coming into it was Masters 3 Berlin. It was the tournament straight after the finals, and we went to Poland.
So you got to Poland.
We got to Poland, and we boot camped there at the King Gwyn facility. We were going into this tournament like, you know, trying to put all of our effort into making this event, because this international event was important to us, and it probably would have solidified us a champion spot at the end of the year. So it was big, like it was a bit of pressure on us, especially coming away from this finals. We were favorites, and we had, I think, three opportunities to qualify to this event, like three qualifying matches, and we fell through on all three of them. And I can see how esports can affect a player, especially not only in myself, as in a couple of my teammates as well. At the time, it was a very tough moment for Fnatic as a team.
Yeah, you've had a fair share of tough moments as well. Like you said, not making an event, having been in that spot with my Rocket League career, I can completely resonate with those sentiments. And it's not an easy time as a team, because you start thinking, you know, what do we have to do? You start thinking of the extreme stuff and roster swaps. You start thinking, you know, like you said, what am I doing wrong? You can't work it out. And that's the scariest place to be, when you don't know why a lot of the time. But then there's also some things that are out of your control in your journey, like the visa issues you guys had, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like these things just happen, right? So there was a moment where we had a Russian player at a time called Brave, and he helped us qualify to this event this year, the first event this year. And knowing that he wouldn't have been able to attend was just like, it was a little bit heartbreaking, not only for him, but as a teammate as well. Like to you know, form this journey with him and like do so well straight from the beginning, to like ultimately never be able to play with him again. It was sad to see, you know. It's like, it's God knows how he dealt with it at the time, but it was sad to see. And as a teammate, all I could do was probably just be there for him. You know, I remember saying before that tournament, I'm gonna win this shit for you, you know. I had that motivation, and we came last. but
was that the same tournament where Durka
Ducker had COVID. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that as well. Like,
yeah. So you guys, and playing with subs in esports is tough as it is. But for you guys, you are known for being such a structured team, one that puts a lot of work into the protocols that you guys do behind the scenes. So to go into a tournament where you've got lack of familiarity, not only does it affect the performance of the sub coming in, but it affects the whole team's performance, in particular someone like Boaster, right, who's such a structured captain. He's then so focused on everything else that he can't focus on his own gameplay. And I'm sure it was the same for you as a utility-based character. So what was that experience like, having to play with two subs?
I mean, it was wild. It was like, it was sad to see, because like our expectations of coming into this event and being like, oh, we're looking on fire, we could potentially win this thing, to now being like, we got two subs, like, no matter the result, we're in an unfortunate situation. Like, it's very hard to deal with. And like, on top of that, we had news that like our star player couldn't play due to COVID. It's like, it's very hard to deal with in the moment. And like, coming away from that tournament, like, I was like, I still learned quite a lot. Like, cause like, due to these like circumstances and stuff, I felt like I wasn't being as good as a teammate as I possibly could have been. I came away from that tournament like reevaluating my performance and being like, I should have done better. And I think, like, I remember having a personal chat with Boaster, and we like went back and forth on like what we expect from each other, and like it kind of like brought us closer together as teammates, because we not only did we have to deal with the tournament in them circumstances with two subs and as COVID, but like we kind of weren't there for each other during that moment.
Yeah, and you learn a lot from your losses in esports, and I'm sure you've learned a lot along the journey and all those different moments, and appreciate you sharing how it affected you personally. And I think the challenge for any pro player will always be around the extreme positives and negatives of winning and losing, and how it affects your mental. And in particular, the big moments where you don't make an event, or where something extreme happens, like you lose where you should definitely not lose. And when you take those journeys away from the expected path, that's where it becomes really tricky, because you then start feeling the pressures of roster swaps and things like that, which, you know, that's quite a big thing that's been happening recently, a massive restructure within the Valorant scene, a positive one. In the sense of the franchising, there's a lot more money going into it, and the future of Valorant is definitely exciting. But there is, with that, there are winners and losers, and you know, you're still with Fnatic right now. Tell us about the off season and how it's been for you so far, and what the future looks like.
Yeah, so I'm still with Fnatic right now. Obviously, knowing that this franchise thing was going to come into play next year, it was always in the back of our minds, like being like of it being like, this is it, this is the big deal, like we want to be in this, like this is what we're aiming for. And like knowing that, you know, a bunch of players are going to get cut and a bunch of players are going to become available, we knew that like a lot of players you know, job safety was going to be up for grabs, you know.
Well, because there's a lot of teams that didn't make the franchise league that had players, like, for example, Leo, who's on Fnatic, one of the best players in EMEA, suddenly is looking for a franchise team. Yeah. So all those players, especially those who aren't the core, like the star players or the captain kind of role, like yourself, you're going to start thinking, am I going to be the one replaced by those kind of players?
And like, especially like, you know, not too long ago, I had a little bit of a rough year before that. I had a very good ending to that year. Sadly, it still wasn't enough for me to be to continue as main roster with Fnatic. But yeah, it's like, as soon as I heard the news, I went on holiday, and I was just like, I need to take my mind away from it. But I just couldn't. It was always on my mind. It was constantly like, oh, where do I go next? Like, what's my future going to look like? You start asking yourselves all these questions, you know, start worrying about whether you're good enough, or worrying about like, is there going to be a space for me on another team? Like, will these things work out? And like, it got to me, like it did get to me. I've been really stressed at certain times since then. And just like worried in some circumstances, but like overall at the end of the day, like you gotta, you know, you play your best and that's what you can give. Like if you do your best and there's nothing more you can do, then you shouldn't be upset with yourself. That's how I view it.
And what in your mind is the goal? What do you want to achieve in Valorant?
I want to win championships. So it's gutting because we've been so close at Fnatic so many times to just get a trophy. And like, yeah, we managed to get one at this. We went to like some Egypt invitational and we were able to win there, but it didn't feel like a real win. Like I want to be lifting that trophy in front of a VCT crowd, and you know, especially like a champions, like that would be like unbelievable. And no matter how I get there, what team I do it with, I'll always be working hard to make sure that happens.
And that kind of brings me on to another question about being a pro player. Is you said you went on holiday and all you could think about was Valorant, all you could think about was being a pro. How consuming is the pro player lifestyle?
Very late. I don't know. I'm waking up, getting, you know, hopping on my PC, playing. It's just like, it takes up so much of your time. And like I barely have time to, you know, do things that I want to do in my spare time. Like I can barely like have time to like cook a meal for myself and, you know, go to the gym or meet friends and socialize. Like before Valorant, I was able to do all of these things, and now for it to be like completely like not an option for me, it's I don't know. It was something that happened quite quickly, but I very quickly learned to deal with. And like, I can always be, you know, happy and like appreciative of where I am. So like, it has its trade-offs for sure. But yeah, a lot of my day is taken up. A lot of my thoughts and processes have gone into Valorant, and a lot of my resources are used up there. So yeah, it's all I think about really. Like after this, I'm thinking about like, what am I gonna do next? Like,
mm-hmm.
You know,
and I guess with that, what kind of times have you noticed it the most? You mentioned when you're on holiday there, you know, when you're trying to get your mind off of it and you can't. What kind of, have you had any other moments where you've thought, all I want to do is just compete and play, but then, you know, maybe like in a break or something, or you know, when you've just finished a tournament, those kind of moments. What's it like for you? Where do you fall to? What do you start doing?
Well, to begin with, I'm like, I need a break. I need to take this time off, because I'm always thinking like, I've worked so hard like over the previous months and so. But then like it's kind of like an addiction in my the way I view it. It's like if I like watch a bit of Valorant gameplay, or if I like hear about future teams' plans, or like, you know, game changes, for example, is happening, like just happened right now. I've been like itching to get back into Valorant ever since. And like, I think it's more of the idea of me wanting to chase my dreams. And like, that's just constantly something I have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. So when you're not practicing and you've not got anything on, what's life for James like then?
When I'm not practicing, not got anything on, I tend to go on podcasts. Nah, like,
you're here.
You know, like, opportunities like arise, and you know, I just try and live life to the fullest. Like, it's like growing up, I didn't experience many things, especially outside of this England. So that's why I decided to go on a holiday where I went to like 10 different countries in like 2.5 weeks. So
blimey.
So just try and experience life to the fullest, really.
Yeah, well, you mentioned about, you know, your childhood there and didn't experience lots of things. I hate to ask the stereotypical question, but what was the support from your family like when you started going down this route of becoming a pro player?
I think the typical growing up as like someone that plays games quite a lot, it's like when you're in school, it's whatever. It's more like, do your homework, make sure, you know, go do some other stuff when you can. But like, they understand it's like a source of happiness, I guess, a little bit. But for me, as soon as I, you know, got into college and, you know, starting to grow up where I can, you know, I'm at the appropriate age to start making money or get a job at like some local retailer or something, the support's like slowly drifted away and I wasn't really, it wasn't really there. Luckily, like my mom was able to, like I had to like just battle my way through it and be like, yo, give me this deadline. If nothing happens, I'll get a job or whatever. But like I said, I had a contingency plan of, you know, finishing education, potentially going to university if it fell through. And I think that like security was enough for them to be on board with it. But yeah, like I said, growing up, they didn't really agree with it. They thought I was just wasting my time. They like it's and I understand like it's hard for them to see like what you're aiming to achieve. It's like hard from the outsider's view to be like, oh, there's money in gaming. Like, mm-hmm. Wait, you can actually make a living off of this. And it was very hard to prove that to my family until I was able to get that first contract.
Yeah, and what was the change once you started earning the good money with the contract and prize money and stuff like that?
I mean, I mean they're super supportive now. I mean, my dad's like keeping up with all of my games. He knows about the scene. He knows about the players individually. Like, you know, every time I meet him, it's what we talk about, which is annoying sometimes because I am like, I want to just, you know, get away from work and just chill and, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's just there to support now. Whereas mm-hmm. before, it was a bit rough, but yeah.
I assume your dad is a gamer too by the stories you mentioned of him chucking games at you from a young age.
He grew up, when he grew up around my age, he played like a lot of like games, arcade games or whatever. Like, so he was like into them, like growing up, but I think life just got in the way and like he liked experience gaming through me, I guess, a little bit. So that's why he was like happy to introduce it to me very early on.
Well, I mean, the journey you've taken, we're only at the start now. You know, we've spoken a lot about the various points in your career and, you know, we only got the chance to speak about one competitive team in Fnatic because that is the competitive team. Whereas, you know, in 5 years' time, you'll jump on a podcast and be able to talk about Fnatic as one of many stories, I'm sure. And from my point of view, I'm very blessed to, you know, just hang out with you and chat about things all the time. But hopefully people at home heard this and started to get a better understanding of what being a pro player is like and not just the dream job that everyone thinks it is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work goes into it. There's a lot of challenges goes into it. And for you to be someone who's experienced the super low lows of being the laughing meme of a competitive situation, the most viewed Valorant moment at the time, to now be where you are, where you've sort of matured just through that time at Fnatic is, it's an amazing story to tell despite it being so early in your story.
Yeah.
For you, what do you think the next steps of your story are going to look like?
Well, hopefully getting back on the server, you know, whether that's with another team or sort of Fnatic, you know, just you know, proving to everyone that I'm you know, capable of being a top player, and you know, and on top of that, just being, you know, continue to be, you know, friendly and, you know, meeting all these fans. Like, I'm really appreciative of where I am right now, so yeah, looking to continue that, meet new people, you know, and just enjoy life, really. Mm-hmm. Enjoy and have fun. That's what you got to do. Make some friends on the way. Go queue ranked with your friends. Go on. Have fun. Go get angry at each other.
Yeah. Is that your new, what does gaming mean to you response?
That's my new gaming. What does gaming mean?
Well, just to close out here, again, thank you very much for coming on. Hopefully we'll get you back in the future when your journey's continued. As I mentioned, this is just the start. And I guess I'll get to chat to you a bit more, but for people at home, have you got any last words? Rather than what does gaming mean to you, you're going to have to change up the final question. Is there anything you'd say to any aspiring pro players out there?
Aspiring pro players? You know, make sure like there's contingency plans. You know, you don't want to put all the balls in one basket. It's, you know.
Is that the saying? All the balls in one basket? I think it's eggs, isn't it?
Yeah, all the eggs in one basket. Yeah, this is me, by the way. I'm a fucking clown. Don't be like me. Poland.
Poland. Eggs in all basket.
Yeah, you know, just make sure you're doing what makes you happy and, you know, not taking everything too seriously because it can affect you mentally and you don't want to spiral into a dark place. Yeah.
If it feels like you're forcing it,
then
you're probably forcing it.
Yeah.
So exactly. You've got to enjoy it. You've got to love it.
Yeah.
But yes, thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll see great things from you soon.
Thank you. You better cut out that egg thing very low.
No, we're going to keep this in now as well.
Sports Social Podcast Network.